Hey there, Kelly here. Guests on the show share so many great ideas, but how do you start putting them into practice? Well, that's exactly what you'll explore when you sign up for the Podcast Weekly Newsletter. Each week, you'll get 3 ideas from past guests sent straight to your inbox. You'll explore materials, techniques, tools, concepts, and mindsets in bite-sized pieces so that you can think about them and fold them into your own practice. It's completely free, and you get it by signing up at learntopaintpodcast.com/newsletter.
It gets harder. The more you dive into this, it's only abstract, the more you realize how much you don't know.
Hello and welcome to the Learn to Paint podcast, the show that gives you artistic tools you can put to work. I'm your host, Kelly Ann Powers. Today, I'm talking with artist Liz Murphy. In the conversation, you'll get ideas on mindsets that might be useful when you're just starting out, but really sort of any time in your art journey, why it's so important to create a sense of freedom in your studio, plus what gets in the way of play and some ideas for overcoming them. In the extended cut bonus available on Patreon, we talk color harmony and the true joy in really simple approaches to color. You can take a listen by joining the Podcast Art Club over on Patreon at any tier. For show notes and to sign up for the newsletter list where each week you'll get 3 ideas you can put to work in your art practice, head to learntopaintpodcast.com/podcast/episode76. All right, here we go. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the podcast. When in your life did you find painting?
Hi, Kelly. So lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me onto your show. I've enjoyed listening to it for a number of years. Really, really helpful. So it's an honor to be here. Thank you. That is a great question to start off with. I recently found painting in this form that I'm doing now, probably about 4 years ago. I've been a creative professional all my adult life. I went to art school. And I ended up doing graphic design. But, you know, even as a child, I was drawing and creating all the time. Graphic design was a sort of choice in order to be able to sustain myself financially. It wasn't necessarily what my heart's desire was, but I wanted to be in the creative world. So I chose graphics. It was a great background, but I was a square peg in a round hole. So throughout my life, I've done a whole load of different modalities I have had. It all brought me to the point after a divorce and a cancer scare to go, wait, hang on a minute. Who am I? And what do I want to do? What do I love? What does it even look like if I create with not a client behind me or in front of me or all over me? And what on earth would that look like? And so my sort of kind of crisis brought me to a point where I really needed to just look within and find my joy. And I had always wanted to be a painter, but I kind of thought, but I'm a designer, I'm not a painter. And I dropped my son off at the studio. He's a very talented designer himself. He's now 25, my younger son. And I think, oh, wouldn't it be lovely to be a painter? But I'm not a painter, I'm a designer. And I always kept those two things so separately. And then after the divorce, and when I got to this point in my life, I was like, I really want to find out what happens. And I don't really care if I am a painter or not, but I just want to experience that. So I gave myself permission to explore. I did some amazing courses with different great artists. And I sort of had come home. I was like, oh, this is my medicine. This is the journey I want to get on. This is how I'm going to find out more about myself and my internal landscape. And fast forward to now, I'm still in that really wonderful state. It gets harder, the more you dive into this, it's only abstract, the more you realize how much you don't know and keep evolving. But I am absolutely happy when I'm painting.
You know, knowing you want to paint, there are still so many things you could paint. So how did you find expressive abstraction? And then how did you know that that was right for you?
It was on an intuitive level. And I know how to draw. I have done realistic paintings. You know, I learned that at school. I can do that with my eyes shut. I've illustrated children's books. I can draw from my mind if I need to and characterize stories. But I wanted to figure out who I was without any external boundaries. And so when you start an abstract, you know, the fascination is that you have nothing but yourself to draw from. Whether it's an experience of an external experience, it still goes and filters through your own psyche and your own soul. And so then being able to unpack that was what intuitively I felt I needed to explore the unknown and take a journey within my own internal world and get out and get in touch with my emotions, get familiar with what I actually look like on the inside. And so that, you know, abstract has always been appealing. I never really understood it. And so my desire to understand what it meant and also to explore my own self and find my joy was a really easy decision. I didn't even consider anything else. I just, you know, that's what I wanted to do.
When you sort of realized, you know, that you wanted to find yourself and that painting was going to be a tool for that or an avenue for that, that feels like a really big ask. So how did you begin that work? Did you set up any rules for yourself, or were any of the rules, like there aren't any rules for yourself? Like, how did you set expectations for yourself going forward?
One of my big goals was to find joy. That kind of joy that you feel as a child that is uninhibited, carefree, unselfconscious. I wanted that. I had a pretty very dysfunctional childhood. Had to grow up really fast. My mother, I'm a twin. I have a twin brother who's also an artist, a sculptor, and a teacher. Our mother got sick when we were very young, and there was a horrible divorce and all kinds of things. So I realized that I wanted to go back and be a child again without any limitations. My goodness, we all have enough limitations on us. And those client briefs were limitations of my creative bandwidth, right? I had to answer a brief, solve a problem, sell an item, represent a client, communicate a story. They were all outside of me. And so, you know, there are boundaries on those. So I wanted to have a completely boundless experience to give myself permission to play and make mistakes and show up and accept whatever happens without condemnation or judgment. And I can be very judgy on standards and things. So it was a conscious decision to discover my joy and give myself permission to play as a child. And play is such an amazingly important thing, which we all forget to do. And I realized I didn't, you know, I looked after my kids. I love looking after them. I've got some wonderful friends and my life has been, you know, nice in the most part. I didn't have a great deal of hobbies. And, you know, I love tennis. It wasn't spurring me on. So I, you know, I wanted to find something that was just me. It was a conscious decision and a permission to be a kid.
Was there a moment in sort of that time where you felt like you were starting to really trust yourself and trusting the art you were making? Did you feel a shift in that point?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I can honestly say, although I produced a lot of really, really bad art early on, I can honestly say I felt as if I'd come home. Was I confident in what I was producing? Not really. But for once in my life, it was okay because I was learning and experimenting and making mistakes and pushing my edges. So that was fine. It wasn't, you know, the confidence and in my ability. I know I'm a pretty good, you know, I know I understand color and I, you know, I've been doing this long enough to know that I can learn skills. I have dexterity. I can apply myself in a creative way. I understand that. I know that about myself and I accept it. I'm very grateful for that creativity. So I just was like, okay, how's it going to show up in this realm? Okay, that's not, you know, that's not working. And I really did make a whole load of really bad art. But when you're in that early stages, you kind of still think it's really great because you're making art that nobody else has made and it's not for anybody. So it didn't matter. And I gradually sort of came alive as well. And as I became more alive and more in tune with myself, so I was producing work that was gradually getting better. But what happened was people saw the shift in me emotionally and socially, and they could put those two together with my art. And so I think that becomes a very attractive part of art, is when you can attach a connection to the energy that through which it was created. And it was very vulnerable and very raw, but just there was hope in it, I think, is what the feedback that I had. So, you know, gradually getting affirmation from other people, albeit a lot of my friends and my clients and, you know, who were thrilled for me. All my friends have got so much Liz Murphy art all over the place. God bless them. They were very encouraging early on. So, yeah. And then you just kind of, I knew in my gut that this is what I meant to be doing. despite going, I know, I really don't know how to do this, but I'm in it.
What I love about what you're saying is that I feel like so often when we're beginning, we go into art thinking that we're working toward a good product. And that's where we're like putting our faith. That's where we're putting our focus. And what I hear you saying is that if you find a process you love, like that will just come and you don't have to worry about it and it will all be fun. And that's such a different way of thinking than like, oh, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad.
It's freeing. It's freedom. And what I craved at a core level, and you know, I worked with some great people, Jodie King, I did her business course and she had us write our why. And oh my gosh, that was so transformative because when I went right back to my core need, it was to feel free. And freedom comes without judgment and it comes with experimentation and mistakes. And, you know, so while it wasn't necessarily my natural state of being, once I could taste it, I wanted more freedom. And so then I needed a playground to play in. And so I've always had my design business. So, you know, that was me sort of being serious in my design business and answering clients and producing or helping develop really gorgeous environments for people to heal and play and learn in. This was sort of my early on was, this is just me. This is just for me, fodder for Liz. And so then I, once I got my playground, again, it was just, I'm going to rent this as if I'm going to a gym. You know, you have to show up. So I rented my studio. And it was a leap of faith. And I had said to myself, it's just my playground. I just go and play and release everything that I don't even know what's there. I just, you know, it's there to show up. And then I can be in my design world and answer briefs. So it was, you know, early on. But what you're saying is it becomes harder the more established you become. And to keep that freshness and that sort of deeply genuine, authentic goal or origin is hard when you've got, you know, you're doing commissions and you're doing, you know, you then put more emphasis on it being an income stream or a business. And, you know, I am a commercial artist. I have I run a business for a long time. To make it viable, you know, I don't have a bottomless pit of money. I want to sell. It's part of my joy of when people buy my work. It thrills me no end, as any artist can attest to. But then you start saying, okay, then I expanded my studio and I need more paints and I need more materials. And, you know, so then you get a little bit more, okay, I got to produce stuff that. So it's constantly reminding myself to go back into that early stages of play and abandonment.
So that's a great segue into process. So we're going to talk about process here, but before we begin, you have a couple of different types of work that sort of fall under the umbrella of Liz Murphy. So could you just briefly explain those different sort of buckets that your work falls into before we start talking about process?
Yeah. So as I said earlier, I'm a trained graphic designer, not an interior designer, but I have always had a passion for interior design. So I have been doing that for a long time now. I love it. I straddle my art and my design. I work in, you know, for residential, I've designed a retreat center. I've done doctor's offices and schools. And I love, it goes back into my why. I love creating a backdrop for people to feel, experience life in a way that they want and to be able to create that environment that conjures up that emotion. And so that's very much part of who I am. What's happened is a very beautiful synchronicity in that nearly all my design clients asked for me to paint them a picture to go in the place that I've just designed, which is so beautiful. And I get to conduct an orchestra and pull up colors and calm down colors and create more of an ambiance. So those two work really beautifully together. And I can then apply my sort of design brain. I understand who my clients are, what the space is, what we've created, and I can produce art for that. So that's a nice sort of the overlap of the two. I couldn't just do that solely. My need for freedom and self-expression, I work on pieces that just sort of come to me. I'm working on a series at the moment, which I could probably spend the rest of my life working on. I'm so fascinating. So I developed that in my sketchbook. I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm looking at, you know, when I'm going for walks, I'm receiving ideas and inspiration and influences and looking through artwork, looking through all kinds of things that really So that kind of work feeds my soul and my need to for self-expression and also understanding a concept that I find absolutely fascinating. Hopefully people will enjoy it too and want to buy it. So I'm running that along the side. And then I, you know, some random pieces show up. I can start a canvas thinking it's going to go in the series and then it completely yanks me out the other way. What I really try and allow to happen is to be really present in the moment when I'm painting and not try and fight it. So some days, if I'm in the flow of the series that I'm working on, I go with that. And other days, if that doesn't feel right, if it feels confining, or then I just stand before a canvas, I, you know, might do a bit of praying and meditating before I start. And then I just allow whatever wants to unfold.
It sounds like you're not asking all of your paintings to be all the things. Because beginners, we often want one painting to be all things. But it sounds like you're very consciously making space for paintings to be different things in your practice.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. I don't know that I have ever thought about it that way, but I guess there is a lot of truth in that. Again, it's setting expectations and pressures on ourselves that I want to escape with my art. Don't want more of those things. So what is consistent is that I want them to be authentic to me. I expect to go through a journey to get to the other end. What's different is that I might be holding the hand of a client or a space as I'm walking or running or, you know, galloping or sitting through the journey. The source isn't just flowing through me. I'm receiving signals from my understanding of, certainly when I'm doing commissions, my understanding of who my clients are and what they really want to feel when they're in this environment. Like, you know, if I'm doing a master bedroom, for example, I'm asking them, do they want it to feel very sensual? Do they want it to feel very lively and energetic? Do they want it to feel really like, how do you want to feel when you walk into your bedroom at night with your partner? And so channeling those kind of things through, or in a living room or in a playroom or a family room, which is much more lively and, you know, conducive to energy and much more upbeat, then I allow myself to sort of channel those elements and the scale and the drama of what else is going on in the room. So that's a multiplicitated process. Whereas when I'm painting for me, I might have an intention for the painting, might start off with an intention. I'm feeling like I want to. So with this series, for example, just be in my feminine, just paint from a very beautiful, flowing, accepting, fluid state that has movement and light and no structure. And that's where I'm starting with the painting. There, wherever it takes me, it takes me. Does that explain the sort of difference that how I do it? But I'm really grateful to have this design brain, as annoying as it can be at times, that's sort of overcritical and often wanting to skip through process to get to the end result. Cause I'm, you know, we're trained to come up with a solution. And, you know, I understand balance and principles and the concepts. And so I kind of want to catapult through and go, this is what it has to be, but I always fail. But my design brain has allowed me to know how to internalize an external need and filter it through me more than I've ever been able to do in any other form of design.
Before you start a painting, what are the kind of decisions, and maybe that decision is an intent decision, but what kind of decisions do you need to make before you know you're ready to pull out your surface? And I guess, where does that thinking happen? Is that sketchbooks? Is that...
Sometimes I'm not known for being consistent in this kind of thing. It's not my middle name. It never has been. So, but that's part of the fun of it. It's like, okay, where do I start today? And sometimes it might've been a color palette that I've seen in a fabric or on a walk or something, or a contrast of textures or a tension of some kind. So it can be really loose as that. It can be, I would say more often than not, it's a state of surrender that I start. It's like waiting at a station and a train coming along and going, I think I'm going to step on. I've no idea where I'm going to go, but I'm just in it for the ride. Let me just see what happens. what I end up, what's the view like? And if I don't like it, I can get off. Rather than saying, okay, if I go, you know, controlling everything, which I'm not a control person, but we all have a tendency to want to control what's in us, is just surrendering that and having faith that something magical will show up at some point.
Then when you step on to the train, so I guess in this metaphor, you know, the start, the painting, is there generally a way that you overcome that white surface?
Love a white surface. Doesn't upset me or, you know, make me anxious in any way whatsoever. It's like you're given another chance. Every new canvas is another chance to experience something different and birth something different. So it's like, it's magical. When I rip that cellophane off, I'm like, who are you going to be? I have no idea. It's like really exciting. And sometimes I'll just, you know, I'll get pens. And so in answer to your original question, is there a format to my process? Sometimes I might make marks with it. I have a whole bucket of or box of mark making tools. I might just start making marks. I might put on certain music. I might stand before a canvas and go, actually, I'm sad today and I need some soothing and I need something that's really going to soothe my soul. I'm going to just be very slow with my movements and very nurturing and feeding whatever it is in me. Sometimes I get in and I'm like raring to go and I'm, you know, got lots of energy. And so that feeds my soul. So it's really, you know, what it's taught me, this process, is really being able to feel my feelings and not have an expectation that I'm going to have just produce happy, happy paintings all the time. That's not how life is. If I produce a less happy painting, I hope there's hope and some sort of spark in it that pulls. I don't want to produce dark, heavy. I don't live in that space. I choose not to be in that space. But in terms of how I start a piece, it might be I've had some paints that I've mixed up. I might start a whole new palette and mix some paints up and then just start throwing things down and building. But I normally get a sense of I need some structure. I need, like, if life is too frantic, I need some structure just to sort of calm me. I need some determined shapes and I need to have them sort of fairly tidy. And then I can go crazy. And then, so it's that balance of wherever I am in my own psyche that feeds my sort of subconscious and conscious decision making the way through.
So if you walk up to a canvas, let's say, and you're feeling really happy and you're working on it, the next time you step up to that canvas, you might not be happy. So how does that dance evolve with the painting as you change while making it? Is there a point where you decide this is a happy painting?
Yeah, that's always a challenge to re-enter a painting where you left off. First of all, I'd say happiness, I believe, is a choice. While you can't just put on a happy hat some days, you can choose not to be in a lower vibration, right? I can choose that. It is sometimes really hard and actually impossible to enter a painting at the same vibrational level. And I work pretty fast knowing that about myself. I work really intensely when I'm working. I do come back and revisit paintings. I can be really heavy-handed because I haven't consciously tuned into where I left off the last painting and pick up on the conversation. I just can burst onto it and go, okay, I'm here now. Let's figure out what's going wrong. And I don't sort of go, wait, hang on a minute. Where were you at? What were you trying to say? And then I've lost the whole painting. My most successful paintings, I would say, are done in a sitting. Now that sitting could be a 12-hour intensive sitting of me being completely engrossed in what I'm doing. And then I can come back and touch up and look at it with sort of fresh eyes and be more analytical about it. Is it balanced? Is there enough contrast? Is the voice that I want it to say, or is it what I wanted it to say? Is it speaking loud enough? Again, that's a conscious entry point that I try and be mindful of, but I'm trying harder. There's a piece that I was working on this week that I just sort of started, wasn't really thinking about it, started it. And there are elements that I liked. And rather than going back in on the second or third day when it sort of jumped, you know, said, what about me? It's like having lots of children in your room going, what about me? What about it? Just was like, you left me alone. What about me? And so I just have been doing little sections of it to just try and pull it together. I'm not trying to do a finished painting with it. I'm just seeing what's, you know, what's not working. So I'm being a little like more light-handed, and that's been helpful because I haven't obliterated the bits that I liked. What's really good is working on a series together. But what's also hard is you can't finish a series of 10 paintings in one sitting unless you're really, really, I don't know, fast and minimal. So I tend not to do so much of those, although I know it's really good for our practice to do a lot at one stage. But I almost sort of want to honor one at a time a little bit more. And that's just the stage I'm at right now. I want to be a little bit more mindful, a little bit more conceptual, and not so slapdash of throwing paint on randomly, which is really important to do. I'm not dismissing that. Right now, that's where I'm at. But I put a whole load of paintings up in my studio. Blank. I cleared the walls, put them all up. If you saw my post, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be my new series. Well, gradually those canvases are being sort of taken and used for different things. But the idea of having them all, I just didn't feel as though maybe that's why I didn't have 10 children, because I only got two. I sort of wanted to give myself to all to each one. But as I say, that probably will change in time. I have done multiple ones in one go, but then re-entering is the hard part because I'm all over the place.
When you're in a painting, let's say one of those 12-hour sessions, like, do you move toward the places in your painting that you love, or do you work on the places that aren't working and try to solve the problem? How do you move between the steps of building up a painting?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question and really key and a tricky one to answer. I think there's a bit of both that happens. You know, as a designer, I've noticed this in my brother, and I get really annoyed when he's done it, because he walk into a room and goes, well, that's not working. And that's, you know, and what did they do that for? And I'm like, you know, so I took him up to the retreat center, for example, and I'm like, so proud of this place. It's taken me 2 years. I know every nail, every screw, every hinge. And he starts critiquing it. And I'm like, no, you can't, you know, but that's what happens in a design brain, is you go to the thing that's not working. And I walk into a room, I immediately see what's not working. It's not always the most helpful thing when you're in a painting, for sure. So what I really try and do is hone in on what I'm really liking, what's really speaking to me, and give that more of a presence. So I'm not designing and painting at the same time. What I have realized I do is I paint, I step back, I make choices, I make decisions, I'm in a discerning mode, I step back in and I paint. Then I retract. I do the same, and it's wash and repeat until all those decisions make up the finished piece and it all sort of comes together. All those decisions sort of fit in together. And that's what your voice is in a piece of work. That's what I believe is how we find our voice, is just a multiple of decisions layered on top of each other. And all those decisions are going to be unique to each one of us. So I can't be painting and designing at the same time. This really is a different part of my brain. And if I allow my design brain to be in my painting, I get tight, I get self-conscious, I get overly analytical. I have to shut that up and go, okay, wait, you're going to come in, but not now. And then I bring it in, and then I can assess and look, and then I launch back in.
When people are starting in abstract art, they see people move really fast. And so they think that that's all that it is. And what I hear you saying is that moving really fast is part of it, but also pausing and thinking is part of it.
Yes, it really is. And I've seen that too. You know, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I have done in the past, in the early days, and certainly on Instagram. And you see, you know, some of them are sped up, okay, but you see artists going really crazy, and it's so fast, the movements. And that is great, but you could end up with a whole splodge of just paint dumped on a canvas. And that's where I think a non-trained eye can go, well, anyone could have done that. A child could have done that. There's a freedom in that. But if I want to be in that painting as a viewer, or I want to claim it as my, I want it to A, have been an expression or a souvenir of a journey that I've gone through, or have elements that trigger an emotion and keep a person in the journey within my painting that stirs something up within them. And splodging a load of paint on a frenetic pace possibly doesn't always allow you to do that. So I like some depth. I like some areas to breathe. I like intensity. And when you're in that frenetic state, you're not pulling on all cylinders. You're not drawing from all those emotional, beautiful emotional breadth of things that we can add to our work to make people feel alive and make us feel alive. It's a dimension that's limited in my mind.
For you, what is the most challenging part of abstract painting?
Well, gosh, it's the hardest thing I have ever done, honestly, Kelly. And I mean, it's the most intoxicating. It's harder than any other. And I've done a lot of different things, let me tell you. The most challenging thing is quietening that critical brain, your mind, quietening the monkey brain in your head, and just in a vulnerable, accepting mode is really challenging. Separating yourself from expectation, that might be your own expectation, my own expectation of myself. I should know how to do this. I should know how to work this. I should know how to make this. I don't know why. I think that's arrogant and egotistical. So your ego serves us at some points, but getting out of your ego is also challenging. Accepting making mistakes. So some days I walk out of the studio and I've killed a number of paintings. I mean, I've killed them. I've lost them. And that I will, maybe there's some history in there somewhere, but yeah. And being okay with that and saying it's just part of the journey. It's okay. Rather than going, okay, today I walked out, I've got five paintings. That's going to be, you know, great for this. It's, you know, it's much better to, well, I much more prefer walking out of the studio with that. But I'm learning to be, I didn't produce anything today. Maybe not for a week. Being okay with that. As far as the actual painting itself goes, the hardest thing I think is there are some amazing abstract painters out there. Amazing. There's some not so amazing, but there's some really beautiful work that really inspires me and it's very unique. And the desire to produce work that's fresh and new and creative, that is not replicating, not overly influenced, that comes from a place that's really different, surprising. That's what's hard.
How long did it take you both to sort of understand where those expectations were popping up and seeing the critical voice for what it was, and then like training yourself to choose something different? I mean, it sounds like it's an ongoing process.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It really is. In everything that we deal with in life, I just had a conversation with a friend this morning. It's a conscious decision how we respond. And we can't control how anybody else is going to respond to our work or what, you know, what's going on, but we do have that control over us. So it's an ongoing, and the universe doesn't give you what you want. It gives you what you need. And so, you know, situations in life, and I'm going through one at the moment, is teaching me, not has taught me, I'm still learning, is to be a neutral witness and to understand that I'm not my thoughts. I am not my mind. And to separate myself, you know, Michael Singer, and, you know, I have a spiritual practice. My faith is a huge part of who I am. And I, you know, I absorb myself with listening to these amazing thought leaders. And so, yeah, separating yourself is a process. It's an ongoing life journey, is to be in that faithful, accepting mode that's not critical, but just accepting of what showed up and learning from that. When I do things that I don't like, I can then see what I do like. Abraham Hicks says, when you know what you don't want, you can then figure out what you do want. So that's a big part of it. And what I really have found to be beneficial is finding the good in stuff that doesn't always work out the way you want. There's always something good there. Even if it's, I got to spend a day in my studio covered in paint, listening to great music. How lucky am I? So that's what I'm learning. There's so many beautiful, beautiful life lessons that I've had the chance to be on my own and do this stuff. I've never spent so much time on my own as I have done since I started my painting practice, but that's okay. It's like I'm having a love affair with learning all this stuff.
A big part of your teaching has to do with finding play. What do you see in your students that gets in the way of play?
Perfectionism, expectations, fear. That's just, it's so prevalent everywhere because how we're brought up, and we lose that sense of acceptance and freedom when we stop judging and being judged and hearing how the world views us. So it's really helping them to access that part of them that is there and hasn't been really acknowledged for a very long time. It might take a while to really unravel that child wanting to be, create a complete mess. Or a complete mess might not be their thing, right? It doesn't, you don't have to be a child and messy. What it is just honoring the playful attitude of experimenting and accepting mistakes. Then when you get to that stage and you can just play, and everybody really does want to know how they can come out the other end, because often if I open up a whole palette to them and they don't understand the principles of color, it just ends up like a muddy dump on the canvas. And then that doesn't fill them with joy. And so, you know, I'm feeding them techniques and tools and principles very subtly in play, so that they can go, oh, well, I can add this. And this is all very samey. It's like putting a child in a playpen, but not with any toys. So I'm giving them toys to play with and saying, try that. Do you like that? And if they don't like it, that's fine. But it's giving them a chance to go, I love that. I love working in blue. It makes me feel so good. And so I'm just going to work in blue. And then if I add, you know, say, well, how about let's add some orange? And, it, you know, they're like, no, I just want to. But they're hearing themselves. And that's what I think, what we often lose sight of in our busy schedules is, what are our sort of core needs and to feel whole? And exercising that left brain, that we can look at things from all angles. There's not just one linear path to a destination. There's all kinds of meanders and avenues that we can take that are very beautiful and enriching.
It's almost like you have to learn how you like to play. And part of that is learning how to play in a way that doesn't make you frustrated. So where do limitations come in?
Time, I think, is one of the big things. You know, I do the workshops in my studio, and they're day workshops. And I'm doing, you know, I might do jelly plates, or I might do something pretty simple. The retreats, when I have people for longer and a more immersive experience, I want them to feel frustrated. I want them to feel angry. I want them to feel, right? So all those negative things are part of the whole beautiful trifle of what makes them them. So the more time I have, the more space I can put around that. But for the beginners, the entry point, I need to be very limited in how much I'm giving. I don't want to be a prescriptive teacher. I don't want to be really, it's okay, now this step, now you let's all paint the leaves green. And now let's, you know, like that sip and paint. I so don't want to do that. So it's a dance between, and this is, and I'm learning still how to do this, is giving them the freedom to go, okay, you go and explore that, see how I get on. And then coming back and going, I produced a complete mess. And then we sort of can analyze, why was it a mess? Okay, so let's take out these extra colors and let's just do that again. And, you know, so you learn by your mistakes as well. And you learn by those frustrations. So time is probably the biggest factor, is stretching that, giving enough time to step onto each run of the ladder and experience the view from where you're, the higher you get.
If someone is frustrated, do you generally ask them what can they reduce from the materials they're using and try again?
So for example, I'm going to be working with her this month. And if she's listening, Jen, I hope you don't mind me mentioning you, but she's a great designer. She's had a very successful design business and she's wanting to paint abstract. She's a control freak. She'll say it herself. She controls everything. She wants to, you know, so she's coming to work with me for a day on her own. And we're going to dive into this, and I'm going to make her make a mess. I'm going to make her splodge things. If she does things she really likes, I'm going to make her mess them up. I'm going to force her into that state of, it's out of control. And it's okay, right? Because there's a fear that comes from being out of control. But in this realm, in this, what we're doing, it's not anything to be frightened of. Okay, you might lose the painting. We can get that back. I can show you ways to use your layers and find some history and make it work. But you got to jump a little bit more with spread wings in order to fly, rather than little tiny jumps. So I'm dying to get her in. And I got another couple of people that have signed up for this. But when I can get her on her own, and it's going to be, you know, she's come to my retreats. I love her. She's so much fun. But she says this herself, it's the control, like she wants to make it work. She wants it to be perfect and she wants it to be this, but she hasn't got the experience or invested enough time to understand how paints really work, how colors work together, what doesn't work, what marks she really likes to resonate, what marks she can use to express this. So it's filling her toy box up with more things, but I'm going to make her suffer. Is that horrible?
I am also a control freak. So I see a lot of myself in the example you're giving. But what I love what you're saying is that also you're teaching people that that frustration is part of it and that it's survivable and it's okay and that it is just a step. It's not the end of the line. Like the first time you get frustrated, you're done. Like it is just a step among steps. How do you get through it? What do you learn from it?
Yeah. And isn't that a great thing to sort of pull through into our own life is while we think we can control the outcome and we often try really, really hard, we can't. And so being okay with that is a huge life lesson. And knowing that there's probably other ways around it and that there's a solution and that all things are possible, it takes away the fear and giving you that second chance to reinvent it over and over again. And that's an incredibly powerful life lesson that we can learn through painting.
Someone has comfort in playing, and now they know that they want to move into start building some of those principles. Where do they start?
Yeah. You know, they're not that many, really. But each one, when you unpack them, are pretty complex. So I have had a number of really great teachers where I'd say I really locked in my understanding. And I, you know, having done this for a long time, a lot of those I sort of knew, but I didn't know that I knew. And I hadn't really defined them as what's important. It was sort of, it just was in my psyche. So I did the Nicholas Wilton Art to Life in 2020. It was really brilliant timing for me. I just got my studio. There's just the start of COVID. I was designing a retreat center in the day and imagining how I wanted people to feel when they came. And then I was in my studio doing Art to Life. And he's a really brilliant teacher in terms of breaking those down. You know, there's lots of ways to make this cake, right? What doing his course, and I did it a 2 or 3 years running, I think. But what I loved about the way he teaches, and he's got some really great online YouTube films that, you know, are really great to tap into. He's incredibly generous about sharing. But so it takes someone to be able to break it down and go, okay, let's look at the principles of color. What do you really need to understand? The basics and communicating that. And then it's up to the individual artist to explore that in their own capacity. Understanding design and composition, there are simple things to understand about balance and how to design a piece. You can teach that, but it needs to be taught. These things need to be taught. You don't necessarily, you probably don't have them in your repertoire. And even if you did go to art school, I don't know that anybody really ever broke it down as in a defined way for me. So it's like everything got organized in my toolbox once I had some of these things. And I can't emphasize how important it is to have those, wherever you get them from, the understanding of the principles. Because when you know those, when you have those in your backpack, you can then jump off a cliff far higher, far greater, take much greater risks, push your edges to much further extent, because you know how to get the painting back to a place that works. So there's no fear, or there's less fear. I'm not a fearful painter. There's no fear about messing it up. And if you do, so what? I've got the tools to get my, it's like a GPS. You got a GPS to get you back to ground zero or the top of the mountain. That's really important. So you can paint and paint and paint until you really get those principles. You know, I've got some beautiful, I love these two ladies that I'm working as mentoring students, and they're established artists, and but we're still just going through the principles and really honing in and really locking those in. And then once you have learned them, you can then put them in the back of your brain and just allow them to filter through. They don't have to be a checklist of, have I done this? Check. Okay, let me just, you know, it's then, oh, wait, hang on. Something's not feeling right. Have I looked at balance? Am I looking at the contrast? Am I looking at color harmony? How does it harmonize? Does it all pull together? Is my eye pulled through the painting? You know, you can go back and go, nah, that's not working. Okay, let me try this. Let me see if that's solving. So it's really, really key. But I don't want to overwhelm somebody with those early on. I just want them to get their hands dirty and mess around and go, ooh, this is kind of interesting. Tell me more. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit more about color. Let me tell you a little bit more about composition. So then it's feeding it through.
Having that in your back pocket, it gives you names for things that are going wrong. Because so often we'll look at a piece and just be like, I don't, like, it feels off, but I don't know why. But if you have the names for things, you can say, balance, how we doing? Dominance, how we doing? And it gives you a pathway out of it or through it instead of just a blank feeling, but nothing tangible to go off of.
Yeah, it's a compass for sure. You can find your way home.
You can learn more about Liz Murphy, including links to her creative play workshops and retreats, at her website, www.lizmurphystudio.com, and on Instagram. And we'll link to everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for being with us today, Liz.
Thank you, Kelly. You asked the most beautiful questions. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
We're finished with the main episode, but there's more great conversation with Liz Murphy at patreon.com/learntopaintpodcast. Sign up at any tier and you'll get immediate access to Murphy's Extended Cut Bonus, where we talk color harmony and the true joy of really simple approaches to color. Plus, you'll have access to well over 25 additional bonus conversations with guests, all for the price of coffee plus tip. For show notes, head to learntopaintpodcast.com/podcast/episode76. Thank you to everyone over in the Podcast Art Club. You make this show possible. Extra shiny thank yous to High Gloss supporters Andrew Atterbury, Debbie and Brian Miller, Rihanna DeRold, Janet Wheeler, Nancy Bryant, Catherine Ordway, Pam Lyle, Victoria Young, and Slow River Studio. Happy painting!